Good afternoon. Welcome to the PA Conference for Women. My name is Pam Hissler. I'm a Senior Vice President and Market Director at Beneficial Bank. Was that an awesome lunch or what? Do you feel like you could conquer the world right now? I know I do. I think we need to promise ourselves to feel like that every day, every month of the entire year, forever. Beneficial Bank is proud to be here for the second year in a row, hosting and sponsoring the PA Conference for Women. As your knowledge bank, Beneficial believes in empowering women not only to be financially fluent, but more confident in making important life decisions. I encourage you to visit with us at our Knowledge Bank Pavilion located in Exhibit Hall B. We are to the left. At our exhibit, you can receive a free credit report, take a photo with one of your colleagues, and share it. You can either get it by email or leave with the photo, or both. Talk to one of our small business experts, access great content through our free financial library for women. There we have a number of books that are also for sale, so if you see a book that you like, you can then step over to the store and purchase it and possibly get it signed by one of the authors. Find out also how you can help a local women's charity and enter to win a fabulous weekend retreat at the Lodge at Woodlock. We're excited to host this session, Bridging the Cross-Gender Communication Gap to Improve Your Leadership and Advance Your Position. You will learn what causes misunderstandings, miscommunications, mistrust, resentment, and frustration in the workplace. You will also leave with practical advice you can use to remove the blind spots that prevent men and women from working and succeeding together. So, let's get started. Please join me in welcoming to the stage the guest speaker for this session, John Gray, a relationship and communications guru, as well as the best-selling author of Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus, and Work With Me, The 8 Blind Spots Between Men and Women in Business. John also is married 30 years, has 3 daughters and 4 grandchildren. So please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, how many of you were, thank you for coming today. How many of you were at my morning talk? Let me just see. Some of you, some front row came back. Now this talk will be just as good. It was spectacular this morning, and this will be just as good. But this time I'm gonna need a little help from you, because we're in a vast space. There we nicely filled up the room. And here we've got all that space back there and all that space around here. So if ever you feel like laughing, really do it out loud, okay? So just so I can feel you in the distance, it brings out the best in me. So today's theme, first of all, let me just say it's such a pleasure to be here. I've just enjoyed being at the event, and I shared with the group this morning that I'd once read a study, which I believe to be very true, that lucky is the man who can be in the presence of a happy woman talking for 10 minutes. It literally gives color to a man's life. It opens his heart. Women don't realize their power to bring out the best in men, and men don't realize their power to bring out the best in women. But in many ways, it is like we're from different planets, and that's what I hope that we can understand more today, so that we can not misunderstand each other as much and realize that we have a lot of presumptions that really aren't true. We misinterpret things quite a bit. Now, men do and women do. And the theme they asked me to talk about, I have many books, and the book I'm going to be talking about today, it's more of a business conference, is Work With Me. And I wrote this book with a good friend of mine, Barbara Annis, John Gray, on the 8 blind spots between men and women in the workplace. Now, Barbara has spent a lot more of her life working with gender differences in the workplace, and I have spent more of my life working with couples, singles, and so forth. And we bring our intelligence together in what we call gender intelligence. And to be successful in the work world, particularly for a woman, but also for a man, having a successful home life is just as important. They go hand in hand. And they actually, before I go further, I just want to acknowledge our guest here, which is this buzzing noise. So I could resent it. I could resist it, but thank you for being here and giving us light. That's good, a little response in a big room like this. I like it. It just helps to fill this place up. And, you know, I kind of feel awkward when speakers do what I'm about to do, but those of you who are way in the back, please come up forward, please. If you would, some of you would, just that whole back section, if you could fill in here, I would have a nice full audience. Look at that. Now, this is ladies for you. You ask and they respond so nicely. Now, what I'd like to mention to you is thank you for continuing to come up. I really appreciate it. It will make my talk better, I promise you. But since, as you're wandering up here, and I asked you to come forth, let me give you a tip. So many times women in personal relationships or in work relationships will simply want to motivate a man to do something, right? And that's called asking. But most women think, I shouldn't have to motivate him. He should just do it. Now, why should he just do it? Because if he was a woman, he would be doing it. That's what women do. They do as much as they can. It's just the way to bait a woman into doing more is say, could you do this? Well, I guess I can. Yes, I can do that. I can do that. There's sort of a deep felt obligation, motivation, that if I can do it, I should do it. Because you want to be everything to everyone. Men don't. they have a gene, which I call the efficiency gene, which you could call other things. But that efficiency gene, basically what it says is never do anything you don't have to do. And you can see that, and you just wonder, what, am I part of a team here or what? When a guy will just sit down and watch you do stuff and you feel like you're doing it all. Now, in my own marriage, this was like, my wife had to finally understand guys, and she's gotten around it, and the women in the office work with the guys, and they get this. If you're not very specific with a guy in your request, they don't do anything that they don't want to do. Okay, now they do a lot of stuff they want to do. They have their project, but if you shift them from their focus, you need to motivate them away from it. And there's an art to it. And I'm just noticing our friend again, just the buzzing in the room. Thank you. Light. We need light. Take a little water. It will reduce my stress. Okay. So. Wow, that's good water. Take a little more. So a little art of asking. If you say to a man, so say you're working with a bunch of guys on your team, or say it's your husband, one or the other. Could you get those papers in before 5? If you do, then I can go home on time. How about 4:30? He says, okay. And then he doesn't do it. The next day you say, hey, could you bring the papers earlier? Yesterday you brought them in late. I had to take all that extra time. Could you try to get that earlier? Yeah, I could do that. Whenever you ask a man, could you do something, it just goes to a part of the brain that will forget it. Because if you're like asking me, you know, can you walk over there? Well, yeah, I can do that. Are you asking me to walk over there? See, and men, they get very picky. Women can be picky about certain things. Men can be picky about certain things. And if you're going to ask them to do something, they want to get credit for it. See, can you pick up the kids today? Yeah, I could do that. There's no credit in that. But, hey, I'm really busy today. Would you pick up the kids today? Guy goes, oh, yes, I will do that. Now he's made a promise. And when he makes a promise, his willingness, his tendency, his motivation is greater to get it done. And part of why it's greater is because he knows he gets credit for it. It's not like he should do it. You made a request. Would you do it? And you're being vulnerable in that sense, because it'd feel terrible if you say, would you pick up the kids today? He says, no. So the way you do it, the way men will do it, is they'll say, no, I can't. But that's only if he can't. And most men take pride in being able to do anything. They just don't do it, but I can do it. That could be a good joke. All the way in the back, remember, you want it louder for this. So we get a little sense of feeling of connection here. It's hard in a big, big room. And I guess this is a metaphor for what this new book is about. Work with me. It's really hard for women working with men. It's like a big divide. And I want to put it into words. A lot of what I'm doing here is just going to put into words some of your experiences, and it can be validating, and from that can come some new insights. And I'll share the insights that I've had. But something very interesting to me is, and I'll start out by presenting this, stress. Managing stress effectively in our lives. Another way of saying managing stress effectively, that's sort of the business way of saying it, is being happy. When you're happy, you're not stressed. When you're stressed, you're not happy. They go hand in hand. And all the speakers today, I love those women as they're talking about the men in their lives, how much they love them. If you notice how much credit, and the moderator kept saying, but you did it, you did it. She says, yes, yes. But what I have seen from many, many successful women in the work world is they often acknowledge the male mentors, the men they worked with. They befriended men in places of authority. It's always understanding who you're dealing with. Now, when women are running the world, it will be men who get ahead will be the men who befriend the women. But right now, there's an entrenchment of men in positions, and they're just going to die in that position. It'll be a while. But women are rising, rising, rising. And as I talk about all of this, I do it in the context of managing stress. Because when we have misunderstandings, our stress levels go up. And then our work is exhausting, it's more tiring, it's more effort. Now, a wonderful theme that was expressed today over and over is authenticity. And when I, as an author of many, many books, I do these book tours, and my publishers, I just say, give me as many interviews as possible, because I don't get tired. And they can't believe it, you know, because so many authors will rehearse what they're going to say. I don't. I mean, I wrote the book. People say, have you planned? I wrote the book, you know. Just ask me a question. I wrote the book, you know, so it's automatic. And so if I can just be myself, you never get tired. It's when we have to be somebody else that we become exhausted. And authenticity is so clear. And you know you're being authentic when you're having fun, when you're happy, and when your heart is full. Now, what I heard recently from a very successful woman was the principle of her big company was love and intuition. And I just loved hearing that. Imagine, I don't know, I don't want to give a name to a company, it might offend somebody, but a very male-oriented company saying, stockbrokers, we're here to love and use our intuition. But really, that's what women bring to the workplace, and that's who women, it's an asset that women have. Another way of calling that would be emotional intelligence, and we're all familiar now with that term, emotional intelligence, and hopefully by the end of today's talk, you'll be familiar with another term, which is gender intelligence. Gender intelligence is the ability to understand where somebody's coming from and correctly interpret where they're coming from, because maybe it doesn't relate to you. So let's go back to stress management. This is a wonderful discovery that happened in 2002, and it turned my work around quite a bit, because suddenly I found that science was backing up all the ideas I wrote about in Men from Mars. And there was a breakthrough study that some women researchers at UCLA did, and they found that all of the stress tests in history had been done primarily on men because women were cycling and they didn't know where they were in their cycle. Okay, so that was the idea. So they said, we're going to do stress tests on women. And what they found, is that music? No, it's just my voice echoing off, okay. Wouldn't it be nice if your voice sounds like music? Okay, so they did the stress tests, and what they found for women, and they found that the hormone oxytocin is the hormone that lowers stress for women. Okay, it manages stress for women. And oxytocin is produced through personal relationships, through caring for someone and feeling cared about. Oxytocin is produced when you feel you're not alone, when you feel that you're connected to others, when you're part of a tribe, you're part of a team, you're connected, somebody's got your back. And she was saying in her talk, Diane was saying, to a man, I've got your back. And, that would be a way for her to say, we're good friends. And that's what good friends are. Somebody's got your back. But when you don't feel somebody understands where you're coming from, how can they have your back? And for women, what manages stress is one hormone, oxytocin. It is multiplied by estrogen. So if you're extremely low in estrogen, the oxytocin doesn't work as well. That's also what they found. And if you have high testosterone levels, estrogen goes down, so oxytocin doesn't work as well to manage your stress. So that's a vulnerability women have in testosterone-producing environments. Men don't have that vulnerability. Men thrive in testosterone-producing environments. That's what the work world is. The home world is this oxytocin romance and children and comfort and ease and caring for each other. That's oxytocin. The work world, to a certain extent, is competition, battle. And men have the battle gear that's evolved over thousands and thousands of years, and it's a hormone called testosterone. Now, testosterone frees you from worrying about what people think about you. You just don't care. That helps to explain guys. Okay, so one of the blind spots that I talk about in this book, Work With Me, we talk about 8 blind spots. I love the laughter. I feel connected to you. Thank you. So the 8 blind spots. And a blind spot's when you're driving your car and you don't, you're going to turn lane and you run into somebody, because we all know there's a blind spot there. So you compensate for it. You go, let me do a double take. And what we can do in our relationships with men or in the workplace is do a double take whenever we feel frustrated or resentful or excluded or unappreciated or not supported. Do a double take and reevaluate. Maybe I'm misinterpreting this situation. That's kind of the key to it. So the 8 blind spots, one of them is, the last one is, are men indifferent? Now, we did this study with 100,000 people. We've been teaching courses over the years in corporations and businesses, and we give them this handout with lots of questions to find out everybody's assumptions and expectations. And one of the questions is, are men insensitive? And a high percent of women said yes, and a high percent of men said no. So that would be a blind spot. He doesn't think he's insensitive. He thinks he's like the warmest guy around. And she's like, I can't believe this guy. He's so insensitive. What is it? Well, part of what it is, it all has to do with how much testosterone his body has. So your average man has 30 times more testosterone than their average woman. Okay, that's just, they measure this. Now, there are some guys that are going to be 20 times more. They're going to be more easygoing, more empathetic, more sensitive, more considerate, and so forth. They have more politeness, more polite guys. And then there's, I'm like a 30 times guy, but then there's the 40 times guys. Those guys become politicians, okay? Really, because, think about it. You have to not care what anybody thinks to be a politician. You win by 1%. Okay, everybody else hates you, you've got 51%, you're my man or woman, and the rest of people hate you. You got to live that way. I don't want to live that way, and I have learned that I can't please everybody, but I try. And then when I don't, I go, well, you can't please everybody, but part of me does want to please everybody. Why not? It's a nicer, friendlier world, and we do our best. So this whole idea of men being insensitive, they're kind of like a bull in a china shop. See, sensitivity is being aware of others, being considerate of. You have to first be aware of them before you can be considerate. And then once you're aware, then you start to care. So it's not like men don't care, it's just they're not aware. It's like rhyming words here, but. So when I was growing up, my mother had 6 boys, 1 girl. how she survived, not very well. But but anyway, they a lot of testosterone around there and a lot of broken bones, concussions. I barely survived. So I became a grown-up, and I became successful in my own house and did things. And I came home to my mother, and I came to my childhood home. And I looked, and the same plates we had when we were growing up were there. There were these green, old green plastic plates. And I said, "Mom, you know, let me buy you some new, nice plates. Let's go shopping for some beautiful china." She says, "No, I like the old green plates." I said, "Well, why do you have those old green plates?" She says, "If you have six boys, you need plastic plates. Because they drop them, they throw them, they do everything. And they don't realize how to be considerate of it." So part of it is women have a high propensity towards manners and consideration of others. Men typically don't. Now, we can learn it. Everything is learnable. That's the great news. Even when I talk about gender differences, sometimes women kind of go, "Well, I see an exception here and I see an exception there, or men would see an exception here." That's great. You know, ultimately, androgyny is where we want to go. I was just down in Brazil on a conference on gender, and they put us all through this test to see what people were. Were you androgynous, which meant you had a lot of female characteristics and a lot of masculine characteristics? I was full androgyny. And then there's the masculine, which didn't have many female characteristics. And then there's the female that didn't have many masculine characteristics. And they pointed out that people who score on the female side without masculine characteristics tend to have lots of depression, higher rate of depression when they looked at the health issues with it. And people who had higher masculine tend to die of heart attacks sooner. Okay, so and androgynous, we live the longest and we're the healthiest. And then there's another group, I can't remember their name, but it was disassociated or something like that. And it was quite often people who didn't, if they said, "Are you like decisive?" "No, I'm not that decisive." Are you nice to people?" "No, I'm not that nice." They were no on everything. So they're kind of like, "I'll disagree with whatever you say." So they're also not very healthy. So just to let you know. So what we want to do is we want to embrace 100% of the who we are. If you're a woman, 100% woman, and embrace 100% masculine. If one of the photographers with one of those big long photography things, she's carrying it around her Canon, basically. She's got her Canon taking everybody. And, you know, she says, "Oh, I read Men Are From Mars, but I was from Mars." I went, "Yeah, but you also have a female side." And she goes, "I do." "Yeah, you have one. And it's good to find it." So that's my message to those who, high-achieving women often are on their testosterone side, and they're not giving room for their Venusian side, their oxytocin side, their estrogen side. And what I saw on that stage was androgynous beings, all of them. They were androgynous beings. And that's what creates success, whether you're a man or a woman. But when you're in the workplace, part of being an androgynous being is being able to relate to and understand who you're dealing with at all times. And so this will give us some hints, because I know how I became an androgynous person, how I connected with my female side, is by being a good listener of a woman. I had the good fortune of being a marriage therapist, and 10 years before I wrote the book Men Are From Mars, I listened to women complain for 10 hours, 9, 8 hours a day. Felt like 10, 8 hours a day. I think that's what saved my marriage, simply because all their complaints were my wife's complaints. I couldn't blame her for them. I said, "This is some universal thing that women have. So if I leave her, I'll find it somewhere else. So let's just learn to work with it." You know, you just got to learn to accept and let's go into it. And that's where I came up with that one of the big themes of Men Are From Mars, which is often women are talking not necessarily to solve a problem, but just want to share what they're feeling inside. Now, fast forward 12 years after I wrote that book, and now we have research showing that when you share feelings, positive or negative, then your stress levels will go down. And that's not true for men. See, everybody says, "Talk about your feelings to men." They go, "What are you talking about? It makes me feel worse." Now, if you're really on the low testosterone side, then you do need to talk about your feelings. You're on your estrogen side. Now, the thing about hormones are like this. When a man feels confident and successful and powerful that I can make a difference, testosterone goes up way high. So just being in this presence with all you wonderful ladies, my testosterone goes way high. It's not a sexual thing, that's with my wife. It's just feeling good about myself that I can contribute and make a difference. And every man's this way. He wants to, that's when he feels best, is when he has confidence that he can make a difference. When there's a problem, if I can solve the problem, my testosterone goes up, my stress goes down. Now what are problems? Problems cause stress, right? But for a man, problems don't cause stress. We love to solve problems unless we can't. If we can't solve a problem, then our testosterone starts to go down, stress starts to go up, and then at a certain point, emotions come into play, and a man's enzyme is released in his body called aromatase, and it converts his testosterone into estrogen. And his testosterone takes a dive, and then he becomes emotionally upset. So men become emotionally upset when they can't solve a problem. Women become emotionally upset for a total different reason. See, when a woman is upset, she basically is reacting to stress. These emotions connect her to her feelings. Feeling connects her to her intuition of where are my resources. So a problem comes up, a woman immediately goes to what support do I have in my life? It's a we experience. For men, when stress comes up, it's what do I have to do? What can I do? What I can't do? It's a different reaction. It's a different pathway in the brain. We can see when stress goes up in men, blood flow goes from back here to the part of the brain that sees and takes action. It's literally like danger, let me run fast, let me react fast. And experts in testosterone say that one of testosterone's main functions is faster reaction time. If it's a fire, let me put it out fast. If somebody's raising a spear against me, let me get mine up faster. So speed is a very key thing that lowers stress for men. So you wonder, how could your husband drive so fast in the car? Doesn't he care about you? He's protecting you in his mind. Now, being a male who understands women, when I drive in my car with my wife, I drive differently. She knows how I drive when I'm alone, but I drive differently for her, and she makes a big deal out of it. Like, I know you're doing this for me. And therefore, I get credit for it. And therefore, I want to do it more. Anytime a man gets credit for something, he wants to do it more. Anytime anything's taken for granted, why bother? There's no payment. And I know from women's point of view, that often seems so shallow. But that's what is. Okay, that's what is. And it's this efficiency gene inside of men. Never do it unless I have to do it. And if I have to do it, I better get credit or I shouldn't do it at all. And so it's a big discussion inside his brain. One of the few times he thinks a lot. Do I really have to do this? What's the payoff? Now, the sweet part of men is that in personal relationships, the payoff is it will make you happy. And in the workplace, when you're just working together with men, the payoff is well, that I have a happy coworker. Men love to feel that they are making a difference around the people around them. And whenever you feel resentful towards a man, he can't make any positive difference. And when you don't understand men, these blind spots will tend to create more resentment in women. And I'll go through another one. So here he is. There's a problem, and he immediately just pulls away. He doesn't go ask you, well, what do you think? Right? We're a team. What do you think? And let's talk, let's discuss this together. No, he pulls away. He wants to do it himself. Now, why does he pull away to do it himself? Anybody ever relate to that when a guy does that? He pulls away, doesn't come and talk to you. I see heads going, but any arms moving? Just nice to have her. I'm just trying to connect all the way back to the back of the room. And okay, so what's going on is when he withdraws, this is a biological function in men that when they have moderate stress, they disconnect from emotions and the ability to connect with others. They immediately pull into themselves and they immediately pull away. It's almost like, let me duck. Let me go somewhere else. And a woman's first, under moderate stress, the first thing she does is connect, is to reach out. And often what she does is ask questions. That's a way to invite conversation, right? Well, that's one of the blind spots in here. This is one of the blind spots. Do women ask too many questions? Women say no. This is the highest, one of the highest ones. Men say absolutely too many questions. And it's hard to understand what that means, what it's like. Why do they not like the questions? Because being a father with three daughters when they were growing up, sometimes I'd hear them talking on the phone to somebody, and one of my daughters came to me and she says, "Oh, Carol called me and I don't even know if I want to be her friend anymore." I said, "What happened?" She says, "Oh, she calls every 3 months and tells me all about her life. What's going on, her boyfriend, the breakup, the this, the that, and she didn't ask me anything about myself." So is that a good friend? No. Now, how that's different on Mars, that would be like, oh, this is something interesting here, because I have no idea what she's talking about. Because I'll go out with my buddies and we talk about stuff. Nobody keeps track of who's talking. We don't even know what we said. My wife is always saying, "Well, what did y'all talk about?" "I don't know. Just sit quietly." "No, we talk about stuff, but we don't like collect that data." Okay, it's like you're always collecting data. And it even shows in the brain. The brain of a woman is in her brain. The hippocampus is the memory part of the brain. It's like a center, particularly all your emotional memories are stored there. It's twice as big in women. Twice as big. And if you're married, you get an extra floor to remember all his mistakes. Okay, this is under stress. So then what happens is, under moderate stress, women have a blood flow to the limbic system, which is twice as big in women, emotional part of the brain. So twice as big, and it's eight times more blood flow that goes there. Whereas for a man, he's having less. He withdraws from the emotional part of his brain. He's now analyzing the situation. Do I have to do it? Do I not have to do it? Am I going to get blamed? Am I going to get rewarded? What's the result I need to produce? And by the way, when he's doing that, he has no capacity to hear another person's point of view. And a woman has 100% capacity to want to hear somebody's point of view. So she immediately starts asking questions. You know, a woman's feeling stressed when she starts asking questions. You know, "Well, how are you?" Well, she wants to really tell you how she is, but you have to pay the price. I got to listen to her for 3 minutes, and she better listen to me now. You know, this is the deal. So that's Venus. Asking questions is such a loving thing to do on Venus. It's like, "Oh, I haven't seen you in a while. How are your children?" and so forth. And it's funny, as a guy, I always feel a little awkward. You know, you say to people, "Hi, how are you?" And nobody ever answers. You just say, or if you say "good," then you say, "And how are you?" Well, there's not enough time. You're just walking by, you know, "How are you?" And it's walking by. But and if men do that, if they were trained by their mothers to do that, because mothers ask questions all the time. And one of the men have kind of an aversion to it for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons is she walks into your room and says, "Why is this room still a mess?" So how do you respond to that without feeling terrible? "Well, Mom, I had the best reason in the world. I just don't like cleaning up my room." There's no good reason. So often, if ever you're stressed and you ask a question, it tends to come across to a man as if you're not trusting him, and there's no point in asking the question. You're actually making a rhetorical statement. Like when you say, "This room is a mess, why is it a mess?" You're like basically saying, whether you're conscious of it or not, is this room should be clean, you didn't do it, you did the wrong thing, you disappointed me, you're a failure, you're a nobody, you're nothing. Okay, so a boy can take it however far he goes. So just to resist the questions. And it's a nature of creating more connection as you ask questions to do it. So you don't know how a man's going to interpret it. So I'm just putting up this a warning sign. Just notice when you're asking questions. So I have a better way of being direct. You know, men want you to be direct, but not with your questions. Matter of fact, your questions are the way you do it indirectly. "Don't you think this could be done better if you did this?" No, I don't think that at all. But if you're my boss, just tell me to do it and I'll do it, okay? but no, we should all agree on this. No, we're not going to agree on this, but I'm happy to do it if you tell me to do it. But there's this whole consensus thing. It's very frustrating to men. We like authority. We like hierarchy. Okay, if you're a position up, then tell me what to do. And if you want to hear me, that's good, but you have the bottom line. And so if you have a position of authority, it's kind of offensive to a man, to some men, when you want him to agree with you so we can all be happy together in one camp. A man can be very happy saying, yeah, this isn't my idea, but I'm happy to do it if that's what you want me to do, because you have the senior position. That's how we think. I remember seeing this movie. I kind of realized it myself. It was some Hollywood movie, really cute, fun movie. It was a family on a boat, and there was a captain, and there's a family, and the father's kind of a loser, and the captain is swashbuckling, and the son is looking up to him all the time. And at the end of the movie, the swashbuckling captain makes the dad the hero, so he gets to walk away hero. But there's this point where the son is like looking up to the captain, like, this is what I want to be, confident, in charge, powerful. And he says, all right, now get down there and clean the floor. You're a swab or scob or something like that, swabby. And so, and he says, and this is a rich kid, you know, what, I have to clean the floor? He says, yes, that's how you start out. That's the first rung of the ladder. And then you become a second mate, and then you become a first mate, and then you get to walk on the top deck, and then you get to become captain. And he goes, okay, I'll be the swab, you know, when he gets down there, because he believes that he has that direction to go. It can get better and better for him. And this is, you know, one of the frustrations for men is when they're married. They think they took a step up because he makes more money. He doesn't realize that that doesn't matter. What matters in marriage is always attention, affection, hearing her, and doing little things for her. As I used the metaphor of the roses, now, to a certain extent, you don't need to know this, but you need to know the way men think, the whole thing about this. Men think bigger is better, period. Bigger is better. So if I make a whole lot of money and have a fancy car, I'm going to get a better wife. That's how he thinks. That's what they think. And it's like we so much pressure in our society to do that. You can blame conditioning, and that adds to it all. But basically, men live in a testosterone world. If they're ranking up here, masculine men, it's look what I've accomplished. You know, if I took the touchdown pass, who does everybody remember? You win the win. You remember the winner of Super Bowl. You don't remember who won second, unless you're a fanatic. I don't remember though. So, simple thing about romance, but it also carries over into the workplace, and this is something every man can benefit from, but you can understand why men don't do what you think is just obvious. The research on oxytocin, which makes women happy, which lowers women's stress levels, showed that when you do big things for a woman, you get a surge of oxytocin. When you do little things for women, you get the same surge of oxytocin. So this is something that women intrinsically, intuitively feel. It's the little things that count. Life is about making sure that big things are important too, but it's the little things, the daily parts of life, that's what counts. And, you know, I can say to my wife when I married her, I love you, honey. I'm dedicated to you. You're this most important person in my life. And then a man thinks, well, I said that already. Do I have to say it again? That's that efficiency gene just popping in there, you know. It's like, hey, we already said that. And he doesn't get it when I'm coaching him. You got to tell your wife every day. If you love her, you have to tell her, I love you. And he doesn't get it. It takes a while. It takes practice. And they can practice and learn. They can learn to connect with that more emotional feeling side. They can feel love all the time. He acts from a place of love, but he doesn't feel it. So we want him to feel the love. So if your husband's not saying to you, I love you, you say to him, now, I know this seems strange to you, but I love hearing, I love you. And the words make a difference to me. And I know that doesn't make any sense to you, because I don't ask you to repeat your name every day. I can remember your name. But there's something wonderful about I love you. And I know you love me, but when you say it, that's the key. I know you love me, but when you say it, it just feels good. That's the motivator when you're asking a man to do something. It feels good. It makes me happy. So the woman who's got these guys and they're not coming to her in the workplace, and she says, hey, you know, could you please just get here by 5? A little bit of like, when you come early, then I get to relax and I get to get home for my kids, and it's really nice. As opposed to, if you come late, Then I go through this awful traffic and I'm late for my kids and I've got 15 problems. I'm going to give you all the details of it. See, men block out problems. They remember happiness. Look what I did. They remember things that say they're successful. So the motivation is that he will be successful in being a good partner to you. And you always make the request direct. Would you please tomorrow bring that by my office at 4:30? Pause. Give brain chance to register. I'm making a commitment here. And that would be so wonderful because then I'll be able to leave and go off and do this thing and what I need to do. And take a breath. Men just love making a difference for women. It's just to use that as your power. So I'm going to go through another blind spot here. Do women feel valued in the workplace? Are women appreciated in the workplace? And many women, half the women felt, no, I don't feel appreciated in the workplace. Men's response was 95% of men appreciated women in the workplace. Now, I really related to that question because that was the beginning of my journey on understanding the differences between men and women. One of my best friends, even today, is a woman named Helen, and she worked for me for about 15 years. She was my assistant. She managed my life. She managed my seminars. She managed my counseling. She managed my taxes. She managed everything in my life, and she did a great job at it. After about 3 or 4 years, she said, I want to quit. I said, why? She said, I don't feel appreciated. I said, why don't you feel appreciated? And she said, because you don't even know what I do. And I said, that's why I appreciate you so much. But actually, I had enough wisdom not to say that. I went, okay, I hear you. Don't quit. Give me a chance. I figured this out. What she needed was for me to know what she did. So every day, I would just check in with this very important person in my life. Well, how did that meeting go with so-and-so? Were you able to make those reservations? And she'd be able to, oh, no, the hotel was awful. You know, they give me this treatment like this. I had to call 3 times. I can't believe that person. I encourage the women on my team to tell me the problems they have with people. Because what that does is then I can say things like, that's so frustrating. Yes, it is. And then they feel connected to me. That's how women feel connected, is when you know what they're doing and how they feel and while they're doing that. Now, see, what women do is they'll tell you, because you don't understand men so well, well, men don't understand you so well. If it's 2 women and you say, oh, I called these people 3 times, how many times do I have to call them? Another woman knows exactly how you feel. So you don't have to tell her. But with men, we don't know. You say, I had to call them 3 times, and a guy kind of like, yeah, so what? I had to call somebody 10 times. You know, that's life. That's what you do. It's called work, you know. There's no connection there. So you could even say what I do, but she still wouldn't have felt connected. It was my taking the time to make it safe for her to say, well, that must be so frustrating. And when you say that, it gives an encouragement for somebody to say, it was. You wouldn't believe what they then said. Oh, my gosh, you know. So just a little bit of that, and not a therapy session, nothing, but a little bit of more communication. So when you're dealing with men, you can say, rather than just say, oh, I had to call 3 times, you can say, oh, it was so frustrating, I had to call them 3 times, I'm over it. The key with men is always to say, I'm over it, or I'm done with it. Or if you find yourself crying, which some men kind of, that's another one of these things in here, which is, do men have to walk on eggshells around women? That was the highest ranking one for men. They were like, oh yeah, with walk on eggshells. Because when you cry at times, all it takes is 1 or 2 times and a guy goes, mystery, I don't know what I did. I don't know what to do. What do I say? What do? I don't know. And it makes it very uncomfortable for him and uncomfortable for you. So if tears come up or emotions come up, you know, what was said today at lunch, you know, that became a memorable moment for her. Everybody connected with her. It's a beautiful thing. Women are more emotional, which we'll get to that. Men can be emotional, but women are more emotional at moderate stress. And that's the key to this, more emotional. So if you find, usually women go, oh, I promised myself I wouldn't cry. I'm sorry I'm getting emotional. Don't ever apologize. You don't have to apologize for being emotional. It's a beautiful thing. And all men get confused about, they don't know what to do. They just go, what do I do? You know, do I take away all the responsibilities? Do I have to do everything for you? I don't want to see you cry. I don't want to see you cry. Don't cry. Don't cry. So what you just say to him is, if you notice a surge of emotion coming up, you say, oh, it's just a wave of emotion. I'll be done in a moment. I'll feel better. Just make it seem like casual. Okay. Because see, when women have a strong emotional reaction under moderate stress, if you say, is this a big stressor? She'll say, no, it's a moderate stress. It's just a little problem. But men, when they hear you being emotional, when they hear you being emotional, they misinterpret you. They interpret you as making a big deal out of it. And don't they say, why are you making a big deal out of it? Can't you handle it? You know, grow up, be a boy, be a man, you know, get some balls. You know, and I said that because she said it today. So I, you know, I wanted to say it this morning, but I didn't. I thought, well, my daughter wants to get balls, but she said it. All right, not me, okay? You know, get some balls. Which I really liked. Anyway, so my Helen became a great friend and continued on. She felt very valued by me for that one. This work walking on eggshells is men don't understand emotions. So you just have to say, oh, it's just a little wave. It's not a big deal at all. You beat them to the punch. You say, oh, it's not a big deal. It's just a wave of emotion. I'll be done in a moment. Just like that. Then he goes, okay, it's handled. I don't have to do anything. And you've acknowledged it's not a big deal. You don't have to say that to another woman because it's obvious to you it's not a big deal because it's not a big deal. But to a man, the only time men get emotional is when it's a big deal and he can't do something about it. See, lions, tigers, and bears, and I don't know what to do. Then he runs, fight or flight, emotions start coming up. But for you, you're having emotions. I just had to do this, a very fun example. When I really saw this, I was at home. I was seeing the research on women's brains having more emotions under moderate stress. And I realized, oh my God, I've been making it wrong for this. This is normal. So important. So right at that moment when I was meditating on this, thinking about it, longhouse, my wife goes, John, John, John. And I'm like, what? Lions, tigers, bears. I got to run to her rescue. And I'm running across, just running across. What is it? What is it? You know, really long house. I'm running as fast as I can. And I get there, and she's like, look, look. What? Look. The ants are back. And, you know, every man needs to know that. See, she's not saying it's a big deal. It's not lions, tigers, and bears. It's the ants. But it evokes an emotion, that's all. It's not the end of the world, but he thinks you're saying it's the end of the world. So that's the one. Are women too emotional? Men, yes, yes. Women said no. And you're not. But men misinterpret you as being too emotional, just as you tend to misinterpret men as being impersonal, insensitive. Because you'll come into the room, he'll be on his computer, he'll look at you and go right back to his computer. He doesn't know that's rude. He just doesn't know. You know, if I go into a man's office and he looks at me, he says, hey, John, looks back at his computer, I go, okay, he's busy doing something. He can't shift gears. We're like, I'm stuck, you know. And then if you start talking, we think we can hear you. We do. We really think we can. That's one of these is like, do men listen? Women all say no, and men say, of course I listen. Who? That guy doesn't, but I do. It's listening. We think we're listening, and we are in our way. What we do is we gather information by a little part of our brain. It's like a recorder, and it's just monitoring everything. What level of emergency is it that she's talking about? Is this something that I have to deal with now, which is more important than the emergency I'm working on? And so it's a matter of taking it in. My wife played this game on me one time where she was talking and I was off in my mind somewhere. And she said, so the postman came in and he is such a good looking guy. He stayed for an hour. What was that? You had the postman come to the house? Immediately that hit some sort of nerve, a man in my house for an hour, okay? I woke up. So, and I can record it back there. So men just don't get it. And I have to finish my talk really soon. And there's more of these in here. But I just wanted to share with you the best I could share in this amount of time. And I want to finish with that one about listening, because this really is the key oxytocin producer in women. And by the way, what are some other oxytocin producers? If when you're at work, which is a testosterone producer, you know that you're surrounded by a team, a cooperative team, a collaborative team, that's going to produce some oxytocin. But even more is produced when you can look forward to a personal relationship or relationships, friendship, family, people that support you, and if you can have a man in your life who supports you, all those things are major oxytocin stimulators, even though you're not there now, but they're with you all the time. So the culture of those friendships and that support is so critical, so that you know when you come home, you're not alone. Alone is the biggest source of stress for women, huge. Oxytocin is we're together in this. Now listening, talking, sharing, we have to get over our hurdle that we don't have to be perfect all the time, but we take time to share some of the issues, frustrations, disappointments, concerns that we might have. If you want to talk to a man in a personal relationship, one technique you can use is say to him, hey, I just want to connect. You don't have to fix anything. You don't have to interrupt. Matter of fact, you don't have to say anything or even feel bad. I just want you looking in my direction. Now, I know some of you think, no, I want a whole conversation, but try this. And then when you're done, after 5 or 10 minutes, to say thanks so much for listening and give him a hug and then walk into another room and completely ignore him. He'll feel so relieved that he doesn't have to talk. And he'll say, what did I do? I did nothing and she felt better. It's the beginning of a new awareness for men that just listening sometimes is all you need to do. Because for him, he feels like he's wasting time. He's not doing anything. He has to be doing something. You can train him to do that. But in the workplace, it's not necessarily the place to do that. But there'll be times when a man doesn't seem to be hearing you, and you start to feel like, I'm not valued, I'm being excluded, I'm left out. What, you know, resentment will start to come up. That tone of voice of a little bit of resentment, along with this statement that women all make, which is, you're not listening. It's punching him right in the stomach. You just are kicking him in the... And that's why he gets defensive. There's another way to communicate that message, that you're not listening. Because what does he hear when you say you're not listening? He's over there going, okay, I'm trying to hear what she's saying. I'm going to be doing this, and I want to do this. And he's not giving you what you want. So how do you get what you want rather than give a message that sounds critical to him? What you say is this one. This is my last statement for my talk, so you walk away with some practical skill, which is instead of saying you're not listening or you don't understand, simply pause. Let me try saying this differently. Does anybody feel blamed then? No. Let me try saying this differently. And as you're walking out, one final thing, try it this week. Anytime you can be working with a man and you can say to him, that makes sense. You could do it 10 times and he won't even know you're doing it. He'll just go, yes, I'm a smart guy. He'll be your friend. He'll be together with you. It's a magic phrase. It's like, you know, saying thank you to a woman or offering help. It's such a wonderful thing to a man. You just have to say, that makes sense. Yes, it did. And the next one is, good idea. Then he feels confident in himself. Then he can give the room for you to have good ideas. Otherwise, he's competing with you. And the last one is, whenever possible, to say, you're right. Yes, my wife has never said it, but you have. You're my best friend. Thank you all so very much. It's been a wonderful, wonderful time to share with you. Thanks for coming out today. Thank you.